Enjoy the sunshine. Its days are numbered. Good evening. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. And a big change in the weather tops our news tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us about a new poll showing, among other things, that Montanans support gay marriage. And in the last feature in our Climate Week series, reporter Edward O'Brien looks at the impact of climate change on Montana's leading industry, agriculture. Enjoy this lovely autumn weather while you can. An incoming Arctic cold front will dramatically change conditions in western Montana starting Sunday. Missoula area National Weather Service meteorologist Luke Robinson says the inbound Arctic cold front will start to push into northwest Montana by Sunday afternoon.
This is probably somewhere around 1 or 2 o'clock. This is when we'll get the first push of snow and wind, and then it'll drift southward and then hit the Missoula and Bitterroot Valley areas around Sunday early evening and late evening. And then overnight, it affects southwest Montana and north central Idaho. And in this area, the snow could linger on a little bit longer throughout the day on Monday with the wraparound from the low pressure center that's going to be sitting in central Idaho.
Hunters planning to get into the backcountry for this weekend's start of general big game rifle season should be prepared for the worst. Same goes for those planning to travel. Home and business owners who haven't winterized their irrigation systems should get that done too.
So potential impacts, we're going to have very gusty winds and cold air coming in behind it. So wind chills area-wide could be in the teens and possibly even single digits. And if you're going to be outside, it's and doing any sort of outdoor activities, hunting or hiking, is going to be brutally cold, so look out for that. As well as damaging waves possibly on Flathead Lake. We could have waves up to 6 feet with wind gusts approaching 50 miles per hour or higher. And as you can imagine, slick roads could have some whiteout conditions from the blowing snow.
Temperatures should start to warm back up in most places by late Tuesday. We'll have more on weather later on in this broadcast.
And in other news from around the state, Governor Steve Bullock has declared a state of emergency due to extremely low petroleum inventories in eastern Montana, low propane supplies in particular. State officials say a fuel pipeline in Minot, North Dakota, to Glendive is currently set down for maintenance, restricting the state's oil supply. It's bad timing as many Montanans are beginning to use heating oil as temperatures dip. Also, Montana farmers are needing more fuel to run machinery to dry out a grain crop that was unusually wet this year. Director of Montana Department of Transportation Mike Tooley says the emergency declaration exempts truck drivers from following hours of service regulations. Tooley says drivers can normally only work 10-hour days, but that restriction is lifted for trucks carrying certain products.
The safety concerns still fall upon the company, so it isn't Cenex and others will still have to monitor their drivers for fatigue, but if they run 11 hours or 12 hours, then under this emergency order, they won't be out of compliance.
Tooley says he's not sure how long the pipeline from Minot will be down, but he believes allowing truck drivers to operate a few extra hours will meet the extra fuel demand. The emergency declaration lasts 30 days.
Officials with Montana Rail Link say they have identified three teenage boys suspected of putting obstacles on the railroad tracks west of Missoula. On October 17th, a locomotive traveling 55 miles per hour hit a culvert filled with rocks, damaging bulletproof glass on the locomotive. MRL spokeswoman Linda Frost has said two other obstructions were found on the tracks in the previous month. Officials investigating the October 17th vandalism found a shovel and a hole dug into a berm about 30 feet away, where investigators believe the suspects hid to watch the impact. MRL officials tell KECI-TV that they have turned the investigation over to the Missoula County Sheriff's Department and that the suspects likely face youth court charges of criminal trespass and criminal mischief. The railroad is seeking $1,200 in restitution.
A 10-year-old Lolo boy has been cited for assault with a weapon after officials at Lolo Elementary School reported he pushed an 8-year-old boy to the ground and held a sharp, broken ruler to his neck. The Missoula County Sheriff's Department says the incident happened shortly after school was dismissed on Tuesday. The boys didn't know each other. Lolo School Superintendent Mike McGon says other students witnessed the fight and a playground aide responded quickly, along with a principal and vice principal. The school notified the parents of the students involved and contacted the sheriff's office for assistance. The 10-year-old's case will be heard in youth court on Missoula.
Law enforcement officers in Helena pointed real guns at three teenagers who had been driving around pointing a pellet gun out the window. The Independent Record reports two boys, ages 17 and 18, and a 15-year-old girl were stopped yesterday afternoon by half a dozen officers with their weapons drawn. Someone called 911 to report he had seen someone point the gun out the window of a sport utility vehicle in the direction of a house. The caller wasn't sure if the gun had been fired, but followed the SUV, which also drove by an elementary school. Lewis and Clark County Sheriff Leo Dutton says the teens may not face any charges for their actions with the pellet gun, but they did find out they could have been shot.
A new public poll from Montana State University Billings shows subpar approval ratings for the state's congressional delegation. Neither Senator Max Baucus, Senator John Tester, or Congressman Steve Daines scored higher than 45% approval. Governor Steve Bullock fared better in the poll. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce also tells us the poll found a shift in opinions of gay marriage.
This is the 25th anniversary of this MSU Billings poll. Students in a political science class used software to randomly dial a little over 400 people between October 7th and 10th. Figures in the poll have a 5% margin of error.
Montana voters and the Montana populace is angry, and I think it's just mirroring what's happening at the national level.
MSU Billings political science professor Craig Wilson helps facilitate the poll. It was conducted in the middle of this month's partial federal government shutdown, and Wilson believes that did impact responses, especially on approval ratings of Senators Baucus and Tester and Congressman Daines.
Well, they're just like it's not an election year, because if you're below 50%, you're in trouble.
Senator Baucus's approval rating was 44%, Senator Tester's almost 45%. Congressman Daines had the lowest approval rating at 39%, but also by far the highest percentage of participants who feel undecided about him. Congressman Daines' office says its general policy is that he does not comment on specific polls, but the office did release a statement saying, quote, "Right now, Steve is focused on serving Montanans and addressing challenges facing our country, not polls and politics," end quote. Governor Steve Bullock scored the highest approval ratings at 53%, but like Congressman Daines, 33% of those polled felt undecided about the governor's performance. Again, MSUB's Craig Wilson.
A significant amount of that probably is the reality that he's only been in office for 9 months.
Governor Bullock says it's difficult to say why people respond to polls the way they do. He says he's trying to work together with Republicans and Democrats to get things done.
You know, I'm heartened that those that had an opinion generally was favorable, but my job isn't to drive polls. My job's actually to run government.
President Obama, meanwhile, the poll shows his disapproval rating shooting up to 63% from just under 56% a year ago. Some other figures from the poll, it says a majority of Montanans, just over 50%, believe the U.S. economy is worse off now than a year ago. Almost 57% oppose the Affordable Care Act, nearly 64% oppose legalizing marijuana for recreational use, and the poll shows a shift in public opinion on another issue. For the first time in the poll's history, it found a plurality of Montanans support same-sex marriage. Plurality meaning nearly 47% support gay marriage, nearly 43% oppose it, and almost 11% are still undecided. The difference between support and opposition is still within the poll's margin of error, but organizing director of the Montana Human Rights Network, Jamie Greer, believes attitudes are changing on the issue.
I really do believe that these numbers aren't going to be changing in the opposite direction. It's only going to keep getting better for members of Montana's lesbian, gay, bi, and transgender community.
We were not able to reach representatives of the Montana Family Foundation, which opposes gay marriage. The final question on the poll asked, if the 2013 election for State House of Representatives were held today, how would you vote? Nearly 43% of those polled say they would vote Republican, nearly 32% Democratic, 12% other, and 13% were undecided. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
Tonight, in the last of our Climate Week series, we look at the impact of climate change on Montana's number one industry. Farming is a tough and unpredictable business. It requires hard manual labor and quick responses to complicated problems. Climate change holds the potential of adding a whole new level of complexity and uncertainty to Montana's top industry. All week long, we've taken a look at climate change and its impacts on Montana. In our final feature story tonight, Edward O'Brien speaks with a few of the people who will be directly dealing with the consequences if perhaps when, we see significant alterations in our long-term climate patterns.
It's a sunny, crisp mid-October morning in Victor, Montana. Lucy Brieger and Steve Elliott have a long day ahead of them at their 42-acre farming operation called Lifeline Produce. Their potatoes need harvesting and...
Our onions have been grown and harvested, and now they're in the shed curing. But now they're dry and ready to go to market, so we're going to clean them and stick them into 25-pound bags for sale at farmers market.
Steve Elliott's been farming since 1980. He calls it a beautiful balance of physical, intellectual, and spiritual inputs.
I mean, you get to work hard. You get to think all the time. You get to work with people closely, doing things where you get to communicate because it doesn't take up all your brain space to weed a bed of onions or anything like that.
Lucy Brieger also started farming in the early 80s.
I'm particularly ill-suited for anything else.
She says she settled on farming after a fairly intensive process of elimination.
Going through school and graduate school and did volunteer work for this and that organization, nonprofits, agencies. Couldn't really stand any of it. I don't know. Maybe they probably couldn't stand me either. So when I ended up at Lifeline in 1983 as an apprentice, I kind of felt like I'd come home.
Elliott and Brieger have owned the Lifeline property for about 20 years now. Steve says they've learned the intimate, the little details of the place after working it all those years.
You know, you only get 6, 7, 8 rotations in a life. So you get to, experience almost like time travel. You're there. I remember when this was here the last time, 8 years ago. And that connection to the land and brings out the memories and stuff like that is just a beautiful, deep thing to experience.
They say they're now noticing things that don't match most of their experiences over the past 2 decades. Steve says the nematode damage to their crops has become worse over the past decade. Now, nematodes are common, tiny bugs that live in the soil. Some are quite beneficial, but some, like the root knot nematode, are not. They can mar potato skins.
I can't help but think that it's gotten worse because the ground hasn't frozen hard in 10 or 15 years. When we moved here, the ground reliably froze deep. Now you talk to guys that run a backhoe, they can dig all year round once they break through the crust. The year I moved to Montana, Flathead Lake froze solid. Nothing like that has happened in a long, long time.
Senator John Tester says he's also noticing similar trends. Tester was farming in north-central Montana long before he knew he'd ever serve in Congress. In fact, the Democrat still farms the same land his family's worked for 40 years. In a newspaper column he wrote earlier this year that drew widespread attention, Tester noted unusual weather is now just a fact of life in many parts of Montana.
My father built a reservoir and the late 1940s, early 1950s, they had it dug basically a pit to store water for the livestock. When he dug that pit, it filled with water, and it had never been dry until the late 90s and early 2000. It was dry 3 years in a row because we experienced a drought in that point in time. My mother was still alive, and she said it was more severe than in the 1930s. We've seen areas, now this wasn't directly on my farm, but areas in Montana where we get a year's worth of rainfall in a week, 1 year, causing incredible flooding. And then the next year on the same piece of ground, because of no rain for months and months and months, they end up with very bad wildfires. Same piece of ground.
Tester adds he and his wife are also now dealing with unusual insect problems.
We have an insect called a wheatstem sawfly. Never had it when I was growing up. And the reason is because when I was growing up, we'd have a week or two of 30 below weather every winter. It was like clockwork. Now, seldom does it get down to 30 below. When it does, it's for a very short period of time. That allows these insects to overwinter and survive. They come out in the spring. They lay eggs in the wheat plant. That larvae comes out of the stem of the wheat plant right before harvest, cuts the stem off, and the wheat plant goes down. I mean, it looks like a hailstorm hit the crop. Lose 40 to 50 to 60% of your wheat crop.
And that, he says, has a major impact on any producer's bottom line. Tester says climate change presents very real consequences to ag. It's also a very polarizing topic. Is it natural or man-made? Is it even happening? Well, back at Lifeline Produce in the Bitterroot Valley, Steve Elliott and Lucy Brieger believe scientists have presented a compelling case that it is happening and greenhouse gases are largely to blame.
I mean, what do they have to gain by ginning up a fabricated world tragedy? I mean, what could possibly be their reason? And so, yeah, I mean, I don't believe that I've lived long enough to have a personal view on climate. I have a view on weather, and certainly the weather has changed. But I can't tell you if it's from climate change or not. That's not what I do. I'm a farmer. But without a shadow of a doubt, things have changed, and I have no reason in the world not to believe Professor Running and the others that give us this warning that we are messing up.
Montana State University cropping systems researcher Dr. Perry Miller studies agricultural systems that mostly produce Montana's grain crops. Miller confirms what these farmers are noticing.
There are some research papers on this topic and exactly out of this region, and it's basically showing an earlier onset of spring. And so just if you compare temperatures in that March, April, May period, going back 50, 60 years, you see a pretty linear trend, and that's coming out of a publication in southwestern Saskatchewan, one right out of here, out of Bozeman with Luther Talbert, and then I just came across one in the Central Plains that showed the exact same trend. So it's just an earlying up of spring is one of the most dominant temperature trends.
Miller says within the agricultural scientific community, there's growing interest in understanding longer-term climate trends.
We went through about a 15, 20-year period where we had drier-than-normal conditions over much of our main wheat-growing region in Montana. And somewhere in the early 2000s, well, mid-2000s, I would say, it looks like that the switch is thrown, and now we've had a set of normal to above-normal water years up there, which has been really great for production in that part of the world. And that is consistent with some of these decadal scale phenomena that have been observed historically. You know, is that what we're going to see going forward? I think, you know, that's the question everybody would like to know, because you could make some really good investment decisions if you knew you were going to be in a wetter period versus a drier period.
Greg Price manages Missoula's River Road neighborhood farm and community garden for the nonprofit Garden City Harvest. The 3.25-acre farm lies just south of the Russell Street Bridge and offers 55 community garden plots as well as community-supported agriculture share programs. It also produces thousands of pounds of vegetables for the Poverello Center for the Homeless. Price finds little comfort in the possibility of significant long-term climate swings.
And that could be very significant for agriculture. You could have places that completely turn to deserts, other places that are getting swamped with too much rain. And in neither of those extreme conditions is agriculture going to thrive. Agriculture, kind of like people, prefer moderate temperatures, you know, in general. You know, there's a range for all plants. Folks here in like 2007 were like, when we had the scorching hot record-setting summer, people kept asking, boy, your warm weather stuff must just be loving this weather. And it wasn't loving the weather. They're not adapted for 100 degrees. Basically, plants just close up shop and they just go into a dormancy to protect themselves because they can't keep up with the heat. They can't cool themselves fast enough. And again, you get into water issues. You know, plants pull water out of the ground. They essentially sweat through a process called transpiration. And without that, they go into a stress mode and they're not going to produce as well.
MSU's Dr. Perry Miller says there's no hard evidence yet on what sort of direct impact climate change could have on crop yields.
There's the beneficial effect of increased CO2 concentration, which is, you know, that's the direct pipeline for plant growth, is how much CO2 they can bring in through their leaves and turn into structural and storage carbons that lead to grain yield. So that's, you know, that's a positive thing, I guess, from that perspective. Cardinal temperatures, what kind of extreme temperatures a crop can stand, what kind of variation in frost and how that changes over the growing cycle could be important. But it comes back to water. And if you sit in a room with the guys who are climate modelers, precipitation is the one that's really tough to model. And that is such an overwhelming factor in semi-arid regions like Montana that it's hard to know how that's going to turn out.
Producers have always had to be flexible, but if long-term weather patterns become more erratic, they'll have to increasingly come up with more creative ways to cope.
There's been some growth room studies under controlled air concentrations using elevated CO2 concentrations, and they actually can show that a herbicide like glyphosate, which is sort of the foundation for no-till agriculture throughout the world, becomes much, much less effective at high CO2 concentrations. And so that's a worry. You know, what if it's a molecule that's allowed us to do some soil-friendly practices relative to maintaining cover on that soil, and if we lost that tool, you know, how would that change things?
Senator John Tester says Mother Nature is telling us very clearly that we are having an impact on our climate. He adds we must respond, double down on our efforts to develop cleaner energy sources. And to those who doubt humanity is having any significant impact on our climate?
I go back to John McCain in 2000 when he said, it doesn't really matter if humans caused it or not, we ought to act like we did. That's really the case. I mean, I think that the long-term impacts of this potential climate change is that it puts our food security at risk. You put your food security at risk, then you're looking at potential hungry people. You put hungry people out there, your democracy goes away. Look, there's some pretty horrific outcomes on this if we don't deal with it like it's real. And by the way, if we look back on this and say, geez, you know, all these bad things have happened and we did nothing to try to mitigate it, I don't know that that's the direction anybody wants to head.
Missoula's River Road neighborhood farm manager Greg Price says the agricultural community is starting to talk about the issue.
We're looking for leadership, I think, and looking for guidance on a larger scale. But we do certainly talk about it, but I think because the agricultural folks that I'm involved with personally, which is, again, smaller, you know, 20 to 40 acre operations and under, those folks I don't think they really feel like agriculture that they're doing and that the world that they're involved in is really contributing to climate change too much. But people are definitely concerned about it. There's lots of talk about it. I personally find it very frustrating because I feel like there's a lack of leadership, but there's also a lack of responsibility being taken. You know, we're all waiting for somebody else to kind of tell us what to do, when in fact there's things that we can all do on our own in reducing your consumption and in the way that we use carbon-based fossil fuels.
At Lifeline Produce, Steve Elliott and Lucy Brieger are doing just that. They've installed solar panels, brew some biodiesel, and use human power when possible. Yes, they say they're concerned about how climate change could affect agriculture in the long term, but Steve adds he has lots of faith in tomorrow's farmers.
Each generation rises to what they need to do. I mean, arguably, they may not do the right thing, but, you know, we're a smart group of monkeys. We'll figure things out. Might not work well for some of us for a while. In fact, it most certainly won't, but it gives us the opportunity to rise to a higher self, so they will have plenty of opportunity to be better people than we are.
For Montana Evening Edition, I'm Edward O'Brien.
If you want to listen to any of our Climate Week programs again or share them with others, you can find the stories on our website, mtpr.org.
Now for this weekend's forecast. Across our entire listening area, there is a winter storm watch in effect from Sunday afternoon through late Monday night. West of the Divide, there's also a high wind watch in effect from Sunday evening through Monday morning for Flathead and Mission Valleys. Wind gusts could reach up to 50 miles per hour. Tonight, expect mostly clear skies, patchy freezing fog, and lows in the mid-20s to lower 30s. Tomorrow should be sunny with highs in the 50s. Sunday should be mostly cloudy with a slight chance of rain in the morning and rain and snow likely in the afternoon and evening with highs in the mid-40s to lower 50s. Central Montana tonight, expect clear skies with lows 30 to 40 degrees. Tomorrow should be sunny with highs 55 to 65 degrees. And Sunday should be cloudy and cooler with areas of blowing snow and rain and highs 40 to 45 degrees. Southwest Montana tonight, expect clear skies, lows 30 to 35 degrees. Tomorrow should be sunny with highs 55 to 60 degrees. And Sunday will be mostly cloudy with chance of rain and snow and highs 40 to 50 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Sarah Howell.
Thank you. Last Thursday, 16 days into a federal government shutdown, Congress passed a temporary budget that reopened the government and raised the debt ceiling until January of 2014. This agreement sent federal employees back to work and diverted a potential default on national debt, and that is inarguably a good thing. However, for those of us that watched in dismay as partisan politics left our country uncertain, our economy weakened, and our government in disarray, there are larger lessons to be learned from the last few weeks. First, I think it's important to be clear on just why the government was shut down and why we walked right up to the brink of default. What were conservative leaders demanding? At the top of that list of demands was repealing, delaying, or defunding the Affordable Care Act. Since the Affordable Care Act passed in 2010, it has accomplished the following. It has begun the process of extending health care coverage to 33 million Americans, who, according to Congressional Budget Office estimates, will be newly covered by 2022. It prohibits insurance companies from discriminating or denying coverage based on pre-existing conditions. It allows parents to keep their kids on their insurance until the age of 26. And it requires new health plans to provide preventive care, including immunizations, annual exams for women, birth control, cancer and diabetes screenings, and well-child visits at no cost. Here in Montana, an estimated 82,000 women received preventive care without a copay in 2011 or 2012, thanks to the ACA. But despite these positive changes and more, conservative leaders in Congress demanded that we do away with health care reform, and they did so by refusing to pass a budget or raise the debt limit, routine acts of Congress that are at the very core of their responsibilities as elected representatives. So, lesson number one from the shutdown. The Affordable Care Act is law. It is a concrete, positive step forward for health care reform. It is improving people's lives. And it is not going away. Also not going away, unfortunately, are the negotiations and debates around our federal budget that we saw rage on in Washington over the last month. The current compromise lasts only until January of 2014, and then we must once again address both the federal budget and the debt limit. The President and Congress have agreed to begin negotiations, and herein lies lesson number two. We must create and pass a budget that strengthens our economy, invests in broadly supported public programs and services, and above all, does not increase inequality or poverty. Of course, there is much at stake in the coming budget negotiations. We are currently under sequestration, across-the-board cuts to both defense and non-defense discretionary budgets. These cuts took effect in March, and over the last 7 months have devastated social services, worsened unemployment, and slowed economic growth. Congress must work to replace sequestration with a balanced and sustainable package that raises revenue and protects vulnerable communities. And so we get to lesson number three. Whatever the policy we're debating, we cannot allow the current negotiating climate to continue. Conservative leaders in Congress engineered a shutdown of the federal government and threatened default despite widespread public disapproval and clear negative consequences across the country. Their actions were an unnecessary and aggressive tactic in a war on the idea that government, any government, can be a force for good. We live in a time when so many families and communities are struggling, and we need effective, proactive policy solutions. The good news, post-shutdown, is that there is, in fact, a clear path forward. There are avenues that allow us to pass a progressive budget, replace sequestration, and avoid shutdowns and hostage-taking tactics. We hope that our representatives in Congress choose to walk that path in the coming months. I'm Sarah Howell with Montana Women Vote. Thanks for listening and have a terrific weekend.
Sarah Howell is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.